First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All righty, let's check in on the PGA Championship as this check-in is brought to you by Southwestern Coaching. Southwestern Coaching offers one-on-one sales leadership and life coaching programs, which will help you increase sales and productivity. You can also reframe your approach, streamline goals, and review your focus. Learn more today at southwesterncoaching.com today. Scottie Scheffler, the Texas Longhorn, is your leader as he is still early on in his second round. He is 5-under for the championship, 2-under so far in his second round. So it's interesting. We have kind of a mixed bag at the top of some names that are popular, guys that have been, previous major champions in Scottie Scheffler and Bryson DeChambeau, as DeChambeau is one off the lead. While Victor Hovland, not a major champion, he's somebody that has lurked at the top of leaderboards for quite a while. And then there's some other guys, a couple of Canadians. Corey Connors is one off the lead at 4-under par. Adam Svensson, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, is 3 off the lead at 2-under. And Taylor Pendrith, another Canadian, 4 off the lead, as Pendrith is in the clubhouse with a 69 today. He is at 1-under par. A couple of other names that are out there who at least the casual viewer would probably be in tune with. Justin Rose is in the clubhouse, 1-under par for the championship, shot an even par 70 today. Rose currently 4 behind Scheffler. And Padraig Harrington on the golf course right now, former major champion. Harrington, the Irishman veteran, is at even par, as is the American Colin Morikawa. So, Morikawa, previous major champion as well. And, again, there's a little bit of a mix here at the top of some guys like that who have tasted the ultimate success on the links, and others that have been a little bit more, lesser known. So I always wonder, as the event wears on, again, it looks like kind of overcast right now in Western New York, in Rochester. The Oak Hill Country Club is the site of the PGA Championship. So, of course, you want the conditions to hold up, but I always wonder with some of these guys. Now, Connors has had some good results at majors, so he might be able to stick around for the weekend, but a guy like Svensson or Pendrith or, even Keegan Bradley, is a former major champion who's a few shots back off the lead. How are they going to hold it up over 4 rounds? Because this thing is as mental as it is physical. And when you look at this kind of a leaderboard, I think we can kind of safely assume that, okay, Scottie Scheffler is probably going to be in the mix for this thing for all 4 rounds. And Bryson DeChambeau, his career has kind of been a little bit up and down, but DeChambeau appears to have his A game this weekend. And this week, we'll see how the weekend goes. And so he figures to at least be in the mix. Now, DeChambeau can be very erratic, and you can see he could shoot 75 tomorrow and put himself in a much challenging situation. But having said that, I do think that the mental makeup, you learn a lot about some of the lesser-known guys, like Michael Block is at even par and through 2 rounds. And I watched a little bit of his interview yesterday with Scott Van Pelt on the course. Seems like a likable guy, funny guy, good personality. So see how he can keep it together for the weekend. Because I think if you're within 5, you have to feel like you got a shot because this course has been tough to score on. A lot of the golfers, big name guys, like they just showed Brooks Koepka. He's 2 over for the championship. John Rahm was atrocious yesterday and may not make the cut, as he currently sits at 5 over for the championship. That's right on the cut line. So we'll see how it comes together for some of the guys that are further down the leaderboard, bigger name guys. Rory McIlroy started to find his way a little bit yesterday, and he is on the golf course right now, early in his second round, even par for the second round, one over for the championship. So, you know, different guys have that are bigger names have been up and down a little bit. And so that's why I think if you are just within five, there's a chance that maybe I mentioned DeChambeau could shoot a 75. Maybe Scheffler shoots a 71, 72 tomorrow, and the door's open for somebody to make a little bit of a charge. And who is that going to be, and how are the conditions going to hold up? As I said, right now things are looking kind of damp and overcast, and they had a frost delay in yesterday's first round. Then they ultimately didn't finish the round. So we'll see how it all comes together at Oak Hill. By the way, I saw this on an earlier break, and when I saw it, I was just like, okay, like it's a little weird, but kind of funny. The Arizona Coyotes, of course, have been in conversation because they are their arena plan in Tempe, which is a suburb just outside of Phoenix, was voted down this week, and their relocation looks more and more like a possibility. The Arizona Coyotes Twitter about an hour ago tweets, Pack, I guess that's what they call their fans, a pack of Coyotes. Pack, if this tweet gets 20,000 likes by the end of the day, we will leak our new arena plans. You know, so they're already close to 14,000 in an hour. So having said that, entirely possible that they're just screwing with everybody and that there are no new arena plans. So I just want to see what happens if the thing gets to 20,000 likes. So I did my part there and was sure to like the tweet. And, you know, we talked a little bit about it yesterday with a good guest from the fourth period and Pro Hockey Writers Association, Tab Bamford, talking about they just don't check a lot of boxes. Their fan base is just not big enough. Their ownership has been inconsistent. And they're having arena problems. So, you know, what is the saving grace? And he talked about maybe Matt Ishbia, the new owner of the Suns, you know, working out a situation with them where Footprint Center in downtown Phoenix could become a viable place to house the Coyotes. And we'll just have to see how this all shakes itself out into the summer. I'm sure, as Bamford mentioned yesterday, Gary Bettman, when we had a relocation last in the National Hockey League, it was a little over 10 years ago with the Atlanta Thrashers moving to Winnipeg. And Bettman addressed prior to the 2010 Stanley Cup Final, usually Stanley Cup Final, NBA Finals, certainly Goodell at Super Bowl, like all these commissioners do their like State of the Union address. And Bettman talked in 2010 about the Atlanta Thrashers, and then in the 2010-2011 season, they were in Winnipeg. So I'll be very interested in hearing what Gary Bettman has to say come the Stanley Cup Final, which is not that far away now, just a couple weeks, because this, you know, that's when you get to hear from a commissioner, of course you want to hear about the two teams in the final and his relationship with those franchises, but there's all sorts of kind of league issues that you can kick around as well. And this is going to be a hot button issue for sure. And, you know, it needs to get resolved because right now it's just kind of a bad look when you see them playing in 5,000 capacity college hockey stadium in, you know, where the Arizona State Division I program plays. And, you know, it's an admirable effort to try and grow the game in these Sunbelt non-traditional markets, but it is a very hit or miss proposition, right? I mean, the Coyotes have been in Arizona for almost 30 years now, and, you know, as we discussed, they're kind of out of options if the Suns won't acquiesce in Phoenix. And so it doesn't appear as if Arizona, like, we've got a 30-year sampling that indicates, like, this just didn't quite, hockey didn't quite take off in Arizona the way you would have liked it to, the way it did in Seattle or the way it has in Vegas, etc. Corey Connors with a birdie on the on his sixth hole. So he is now tied with the lead. He was a guy I said, keep an eye out for him, the Canadian. I got 10 bucks on him at 80-1. So I'd like to reel in a nice $800 cash over the weekend if the Canadian can come through for me. But a long way to go as Connors is now tied with Scottie Scheffler at 5-under for the championship. And again, looking up at the conditions, I just hope that the rain holds off because it doesn't look all that sunny right now in Rochester, New York. So I hope they're able to just get this second round in as we still have, you know, 4 or 5 hours, I'm sure, of golf to be played in Western New York before this thing concludes. So Corey Connors now tied with Scottie Scheffler for the lead at the PGA Championship as we're still in the middle portion of the second day, and it is cut day. So we'll see. Obviously, there's that drama to keep an eye on as well. I mentioned John Rahm, the Masters champion and number one golfer in the world, is struggled yesterday. He is 1-under through three holes today as he tries to, at the very least, make the cut. And, you know, he just got beat up. A lot of guys are out there getting beat up by this golf course. So we'll see what happens as Scheffler's got a long putt here to try and birdie the sixth hole as well. I guess him and Connors are playing together today. And it is going to just spray wide to the left. So they will remain even at 5-under par atop the leaderboard. Take a timeout. Time to go to the 10th inning on the other side. John Bellmer's got our loosey-goosey headlines from the week. And then John Corrales will join in from the Boston Sports Journal to talk Celtics and Heat game 2 tonight in Beantown. First Name Sports, Sportsman Radio.
Well, we go into extra innings here, huh?
Time to give you the extra stories and headlines that you probably missed from the week that was.
It's the 10th inning on First Name Sports.
All right, before we go to the 10th, let's give a shout-out to our friends at Total Wine & More. With so many great bottles to choose from, there's always something new to try at Total Wine & More. How about a great Prosecco for under $8 and a French Rosé for under $7? With the lowest prices for over 30 years, find what you love and love what you find only at Total Wine & More. Drink responsibly. Be 21. All right, if you're new to the program, every Friday we have a couple of benchmarks that we like to do. One of them is this segment we're in right now called the 10th inning, where our producer John Bellmer runs through the headlines that are a little less serious. I call them the loosey-goosey headlines of the week, and we just kick around a couple minutes per headline and get a segment's worth out of it. Bellmer, without further ado, what do we got this week?
Yeah, well, this first one might not be as loosey-goosey. Are you a sneaker guy?
I am not.
You're not. Yeah, see, I'm not a big sneaker guy. I like them. I don't collect them or anything. But we all know that when you become, you know, a big-time superstar in a league, a lot of times you end up with some kind of a shoe deal from one of these big companies. Well, John Morant, we know he's been in the news this week for another gun-waving incident that's caused waves in his life, has a shoe deal with Nike. And Nike has not yet pulled that deal, but I think this might be a sign that it is. If you go on Nike's website right now, his shoes are not available on the website. He still has another one that is released or said to be released on the 25th. So I don't think this has led to them dropping Ja yet. I don't think they've made that decision. But it looks like it might be coming to that point. Yeah, we're on pause at the moment.
Yeah.
And then also we've got people like, you know, Michael Wilbon coming out and saying, I won't let my kids wear John Morant's shoes.
Yeah.
This is, to me, going to hurt him in the long run financially, maybe even more than,
you know,
if he messes up the contract with.
This is another element of the story that we didn't discuss.
Yeah.
Because we've mostly been looking at it through the lens of what will the NBA do? What will the suspension be? How will Adam Silver treat this? But you're right. From an endorsement standpoint, again, these are all things when it comes to the public image side of this story that make him different than that's why we don't want to I don't want to hear the like Second Amendment rights and that stuff, because all the people that want to claim their Second Amendment rights aren't reeling in these massive shoe deals. They're not playing in the NBA. They don't have to set an example for anyone. And I'm sure all the commissioners in their leagues would like for those star players to be, you know, role models, or at least if they're not going to have a public life, to not be doing this. And so, obviously, I understand the league stepping in and suspending him even stronger, but I also understand the companies saying, hey, this is not a good investment for us anymore.
Yeah, I mean, and it makes sense from their standpoint too. Like, lots of kids buying their shoes.
Yeah,
and they don't want to sell, or they, you know, parents may not want their kids buying,
right,
you know, this guy's shoes if he keeps acting like this. It's setting a bad example.
Yeah,
even though I will say he's very popular amongst younger kids, like social media, that whole high school crowd, I guess, middle school crowd, like
is he
coming
a TikToker?
Up. I don't think he's a TikToker,
like, okay,
but his highlights and all that go so viral online, and the younger kids really follow Josh.
You
so
know, it's funny. It's,
hope he gets that together.
It's funny you mention that, because before I worked here, I worked in small town Minnesota, and there was a family that was very good to me and had me over for meals a lot, and I would hang out with their son was a high school kid, and he would always, like, he never actually sat down and watched the games. Like, I would watch games with his dad. He usually wouldn't watch the whole game, but he'd always, like, show me, hey, like, look at this, like, TikTok of, like, this NBA player, or look at this, like, goal Austin Matthews scored last night. And it's amazing. Like, when I realized that, I was like, the attention span of that generation is just, like, they can't just, like, sit down and watch a game.
You know, they could, but I think they would prefer to ingest that entertainment in bits and pieces that they want, and then go to the next thing and the next thing. Yeah,
right.
It's just a different way of ingesting it.
So they'd rather do, like, 15 forms of entertainment for 10 minutes a piece as opposed to one form of entertainment for 150
minutes.
Yeah,
I'll take sitting down and watching the game.
Yeah.
Speaking of I guess that's not a good transition, but Zach Gallen, a pitcher in Major League Baseball here. Shades of Randy Johnson. He was warming up in the outfield. You know, pitchers go out there and stretch and throw with the catchers before the game. Threw looked like he was throwing a warm-up line drive across and hit a bird. The same way that Randy Johnson did off the mound in, the late 90s?
Early 2000s.
Early 2000s. Shades of Randy Johnson. I just think it's crazy that the chances of this specific thing happening again. And being, the same team and caught on camera. The chances of this happening are low. Slim to none.
Yeah. Gosh, it was harder to make out, like, the bird, at least in the video I saw, it didn't look like the bird exploded the same way.
No, it didn't.
Yeah.
It's still just as devastating
to
the bird.
Like, that's just an observation. That wasn't me saying I wish it did, you know.
Yeah, that was kind of, I mean, the footage would have been better, right?
I mean, you know, it is what it is.
Would have been a better video.
Yeah.
This next one, I think, is absolutely ridiculous. It's a cop-out, it's an excuse, and it's stupid. Draymond Green said, looks like yesterday on Stephen A's World during the game, it was like a watch-along. I hate that they're doing that, too. There's a watch-along for everything now.
By the way, are you, like, you don't really care for that,
I don't,
right? Like
I don't care
cast,
for it, no.
The K-Rod cast on Sunday Night Baseball.
I could care less for all that.
I agree.
Draymond Green said on this cast with Stephen A yesterday that the reason they are not still playing in the playoffs is because he punched Jordan Poole in the face before the season. Basically
he's
saying,
still hung up on that, huh?
Yeah, but they're all hung up on that. Steve Kerr said the same thing. They're actually using that as an excuse, saying that the team chemistry was never the same after that. They couldn't come together. That is what's wrong with the Warriors. Is what they're saying. You know how you were asking yesterday? We don't know what's wrong with the. This is what they're saying. I think that's a cop out. You had the entire season to figure it out. They said they were good.
And here's the thing, we talk about it. As far as, like, something that James Harden lacks, like that mental toughness element of the equation, and we talk about it with how the Heat are great with it, you know, Heat culture and all these intangibles. You need to have that if you win a championship. So the Warriors having won four of them, I have a hard time thinking that this could fracture a locker room so much to where it festers the entire season. If it was a dysfunctional franchise, sure, but not a team that won four championships in the last 8 years.
Exactly. And for Steve Kerr to say it, I think that's a little bit of an indictment on him. You couldn't bring the team together across the entire season?
You know, we talked about it, I think it was yesterday or Wednesday, we brought up how the GM, Bob Myers, was, like, at odds over a contract. He's just like, hey, like, all these guys, including the coach, nobody's accountable, everybody's pointing fingers, I'm out of here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now to the diamond, to one of the most badass first pitches I have ever seen. Are you a Jackass fan? Are you a Steve-O guy?
No.
No. Yeah, me neither. Not a huge fan. But this stunt that they pulled at the Padres game the other day was incredible. Steve-O comes out to throw the first pitch of the game, and I don't know what he had in his glove. blows into his glove and spits fire in the air, a whole column of fire in the air, and then turns around and throws the first pitch. Never seen anything like that.
You liked it?
That's badass. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Okay.
It's not as cool as, what's her name? Simone Biles doing the, like, crazy 360, like, flip or whatever and then throwing the ball.
Wouldn't part of you, like, I understand that this is a skill that these people possess, whatever it might be, so they're confident that they can pull it off. But do you think there's a tinge of their brain that says, gosh, if I screw this up, this is going to, I'm going to be a meme for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, they're human. Of course it's in there. Right. But they're so good at what they do. Like, the Steve-O one especially, because, like, if that goes wrong and now you're caught on fire in front of 20,000 people in a stadium, like, that could be really bad.
I don't know. No pun intended here, but I might play it down the middle and just, if I go out there and throw out a smooth first pitch, I can't, there's nothing to screw up. Like, all I have to do, like people say, like, don't bounce the first pitch, right? Like, obviously I wouldn't bounce it, but even
you think
if,
you wouldn't bounce it?
I would not bounce it, no shot.
Okay.
But even if you don't, even if you bounce it, there have been, I'm sure, a ton of people that have bounced first pitches that we don't know. The only guy that screwed up the normal first pitch so badly, do you know who I'm going to say?
Who?
50 Cent? Yeah. At Citi Field. The worst all-time first pitch I've ever seen. So, like, I don't know. You can't screw it up if you do something simple. If you try and do something more creative and it goes horribly wrong, you can embarrass yourself.
Yeah, and that and the fire one could have been really bad, too. Two more quick ones for you. Are you a Dr. Pepper guy?
It's not bad.
Dr. Pepper is huge in the South. Bluebell's also huge in the South. They've now partnered together. There is a new Dr. Pepper flavored ice cream. Are you in or out on this?
I think I'm out.
I think I'm in.
Really?
I think I'd like it, yeah, because Whataburger has the Dr. Pepper shake, and everything I've seen is kind of similar to that, and I do enjoy the Dr. Pepper shake quite a bit. Joel Damon, one of the golfers, I think he's competing here in the PGA Championship, hit a bystander at the course with a ball and gave him free beer for the whole day for doing it. I think that's a fair trade, yeah.
I guarantee you that's a fair trade with how much they're charging for beers. Oh. I've been to one live golf event, and we unfortunately got the raw deal with some bad weather that we didn't get the whole day in. But, yeah, the prices for the beer, because they know they have you. You're there all day, and you're going to want to buy a beer. You're going to want to buy – it's one thing if it's a stadium where it's like a two-and-a-half-hour, three-hour game. You might be able to hold out. You're at a golf event. You're there all day. No shot. We'll take a timeout, and we'll come back from the Boston Sports Journal. Joining the show on the other side, John Corrales, as the Celtics try and get even with the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals, Game 2 tonight in Beantown. We'll discuss First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
With First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
Let's go out to the Progressive Guest Line. Game 2 tonight in Beantown. Celtics and Heat Eastern Conference Finals in the National Basketball Association as Boston tries to pull even after Miami took Game 1 at TD Garden. We bring on John Corrales from the Boston Sports Journal and the Locked On Celtics podcast. John, good to have you aboard. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. We look ahead to this game two tonight. Let's go back to game one first. How do you explain the fourth quarter from Jason Tatum Wednesday night?
I think, first of all, I mean, it wasn't as bad as it looked. He had the three turnovers, the two travels that took away shot opportunities for him. He did get to the line six times, so those could have been three shots. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he could have had... If he'd hit a couple of the shots that were the travels, let's say, could have had a 10-point quarter and no one would be saying much. But it's still, I think, indicative of the Celtics playing too slow, playing a little too lazy, and that's just one of the symptoms of how the Celtics kind of came out and how they approached that second half, because it wasn't good.
You know, you mentioned playing too slow, playing a little too lazy. That's what Game 5 against the Sixers looked like, too. And they've had this weird ebb and flow at home where some nights they look like the best team in the NBA at TD Garden, and other nights they treat a playoff game like a regular season game. How do you explain that?
I can't. Nobody can. You know, like that's something that we've been asking and trying to ask 10 different ways to see if anybody can actually give us a real answer. In fact, Robert Williams might be the most honest guy on the team at the after the film session on Thursday. He came out and he kind of looked like forlorn. He kind of looked like, you know, he said there was a lot on that film that it was hurtful. And he said we can't keep relying on playing with our backs to the walls. We got to change it. So he's confused. And it's if the players are confused, then that tells you a lot. So I don't know what it is. I don't know how you change it. I don't know if you have to hypnotize them into thinking they're down 3-2 every time. I don't know if you have to put down a Miami Heat floor at home to try to trick them into thinking that they're on the road. Whatever it is, it's all between their heads, and no one seems to know how to get them out of it.
Okay, when we look at Miami, I do feel like if anybody should kind of know what the Heat are capable of, despite the fact that they're an 8 seed, it's the Celtics because of the history with 3 of the last 4 Eastern Conference Finals being these two teams. League-wide, and maybe they're in Boston amongst the fans, though, was there still some of, Giannis got hurt, then they played the Knicks, like lucky path here for the Heat?
I think that has to be part of the story. And the Heat are a big-time confidence team. Jimmy Butler is confidence personified. But they did lose a play-in game. You know, they were down to the Chicago Bulls in a second play-in game, and then Jimmy took over. Mm-hmm. So getting rolling against a Bucks team that was missing Giannis, an all-world player, is a great way to get your confidence going. And whatever was happening in Milwaukee, that was just hard to explain. And yeah, the Knicks definitely were a good kind of advantageous matchup, but they still had to take advantage of it. So it doesn't matter what the path was. Fact is that they still had to get there.
Yeah.
And they, if you're kind of dismissing an 8 seed that beat a top seed, even without Giannis, that team is more than just Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Sure.
You have to take them seriously, and you know, I'm not so sure the Celtics did in game one.
Yeah, and I said it even at the time when Giannis went down, it wasn't like everybody was immediately handing the Heat the series, you know, so they still had to go out there and do it. When it comes to defending Jimmy Butler, you know, how do the Celtics do something that seemingly no one has been able to do in the playoffs?
Yeah, you know, you don't overreact to it. That's my number one thing with Jimmy Butler. The Celtics have a bunch of guys who can guard him well. He's going to hit some tough shots. Don't overreact. Don't send double teams. Don't hedge. Don't think, Jimmy's hit 3 shots in a row. I gotta pinch in from the strong side corner, because he's going to make that pass. And while I don't trust Miami's offense to keep shooting the way they're shooting, those guys are still very capable of hitting wide open threes. So the Celtics got to stop making dumb mistakes like strong side help. That's just a formula for letting those guys get going and for making it much more difficult on yourselves. Defend Jimmy Butler straight up. And if he scores 40, he scores 40. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Let him have that big game. Don't let the other guys go for whatever. They scored 123 points in game one. Jimmy Butler had 35. So a lot of other guys did a lot of other scoring. You know, that's my main concern. I don't care if Jimmy Butler is transcendent scoring the ball. I care that Max Strus and Gabe Vincent and, you know, Caleb Martin are all getting 15, 15, 15, Kyle Lowry 15. You just can't let that happen.
You know, John, another thing I feel like you can probably speak to pretty well is just the level of confidence or maybe lack of confidence in Joe Mazzulla, because I felt like coming into this series, and we've seen this prior to this year's Eastern Conference Finals, Miami against Boston has won the close games, Boston has won the blowouts. And then when you look at these playoffs, the Celtics, a lot of their wins have been by a considerable margin, where it's just like undoubtedly they're the best team, and Mazzulla hasn't had to push a lot of buttons. Rookie head coach in this spot, especially trying to match wits with Eric Spoelstra if we get in tight games down the stretch, might not be favorable for the Celtics. What can you tell us about Mazzulla and just the level of confidence that Celtics fans have in him?
It's not the highest level of confidence. you're right. It definitely feels like they need to be winning by a lot. And in fact, what they need to be winning is by like 25. So when they relax in the fourth quarter, it's still a 10-point win. that seems to be their formula. Missoula. Look, I don't think it's as bad as people think. I think there are certainly some level of people know to call. They know to call timeouts in certain spots, right? Everybody in the world says this is where you should have called a timeout. And sure. when somebody doesn't, then that's a form of criticism. You don't know what the coach is doing every day in the practice, in the film room. The guys respect him. Guys have spoken very highly of him. So he has to be doing something right. They did win 57 games. They did get to the conference finals. It's not the easiest path, but they have done it. And we've seen teams with talent that are not here anymore. And, so that does say a lot. But there are in-game things that I think have been my biggest fear. It's the feel of the game. That Joe is very much – he's smart. He's super, super smart. But he very much goes by the numbers right now. He hasn't had enough experience to get the feel of the game. And that's where Spo is just, a coaching god. He understands the flow. He understands what the game needs. You know, if the game needed Udonis Haslem, he would put Udonis Haslem in there. And, it's whatever the game needs. Zone, oh, they're killing the zone, we're going to go man. Forget it.
Yeah.
And, we know that everybody expects us to go. It's those things, and I think Joe's big thing is we're sticking with this because this is what we do. And if it's not working, he just says, nope, we're going to stick with it.
Right.
Because that's what we do. And I don't think he's great at giving the game what it needs.
Sounds like kind of a square peg, round hole type thing sometimes.
Sort of. So, I'm not even worried about the timeouts. Would I have called a timeout at the beginning of the third quarter? Yeah. I mean, it looks bad when you don't call a timeout and you lose a third quarter by 21, but that's all on the players. That's on the players completely. And what he probably should have done was tried some different personnel or, tried a different defense or a call play, something to get them kind of snap out of it in a different way. So it's not the highest level of confidence, but it's not as bad as it seems.
And, John, I guess we'll leave with this. If you're a Celtics fan, even though you certainly gave Miami a lot of life with that game one win for Miami, you win against Miami in seven games last year. You come back in the second round down 3-2 against Milwaukee last year, down 3-2 against the Sixers. They come back and win. So it does seem like a resilient locker room that in a long series could pull through again, right?
Yeah, it definitely seems like that. I mean, I don't have any fears of the Celtics losing this series necessarily. But you can only do that so much, right, before you run out of, before the well runs dry. So they probably need to start taking more control. They did this last year, and they ran out of gas in the finals. So we're at an every other day stretch here of the season, of the postseason. They've got to play better. They've got to play with more poise and stop messing around. So, they're certainly capable. They can win four games in a row. They're capable of that. But the difference between doing it and capable of doing it is different with these guys.
There he is, John Corrales on the Progressive Guest Line from the Boston Sports Journal and the Locked On Celtics podcast. John, thank you for your time. Enjoy game two.
My pleasure. All right.
Some sad news to pass along out of the National Football League as Jim Brown, the legendary running back from the Cleveland Browns, has passed away at the age of 87, as his wife Monique announced. So RIP to one of the greatest running backs in the history of the National Football League. We'll take a timeout Friday 5 on the other side to wrap things up for the week.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You want to ask this guy some questions?
Since it's Friday, it's time for some fun questions to get you ready for the weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
It's the Friday 5 with Greg Frank.
All right, as our usual end-of-week segment presents itself yet again, we'll provide you a refresher if you're new to the segment. What we do here to wrap up the week, just five little would-you-rathers, put yourselves in somebody else's shoes, hypotheticals, water cooler topics, could be a personal anecdote story from the week in our daily lives or a sports headline, and we try and make you pick which way you would go in the this or that scenario. So without further ado, let's jump in and start with last night's marathon hockey game at PNC Arena in Raleigh, North Carolina. Four overtimes. It didn't end until, I think it was like 2 in the morning, East Coast time. And so, John Bellmer, I ask you, what's the latest you would stay at a sporting event on a work night?
Well, if it's a good enough sporting event, there's no time limit for me. That's what coffee's made for.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care. If I'm at a sporting event, especially if I'm there, I'm not squandering that opportunity to be there for whatever happens late into the night, just so that I can make it to work the next day.
I agree with you. If it's a playoff game, if it's a regular season game, I may have second thoughts.
Well, it depends on how good the regular season game is. Like, if you're in the 12th or 13th inning, and you know, you never know what can happen in a big game. Like, if it's a big game, I'm not talking about like the third game of the season or 12th game of the season baseball. Those don't matter. Yeah, maybe you do go if you got to go to work early. But the game's important enough, there's no time.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you. I would stick it out. And yeah, maybe you're hurting a little bit the next day, but you leave with a story to tell, right? It's a story that you hope that the team you're cheering for wins and you remember forever, as opposed to one day of being a little groggy. So on that note, let's transition. James Harden, obviously a topic we led the show with. It reports out that he will leave the Sixers and go to the Rockets in free agency. Still got about 6 weeks until free agency opens in the NBA. But it looks like things are trending in the direction of a reunion between the Rockets and James Harden. And so, John Bellmer, I ask you this. You are James Harden, and your career is widely viewed as one with mixed feelings, where some people are appreciative of what you have accomplished, and others are highlighting your lows and your playoff doldrums and things like that. And you've already been in the NBA for over a decade, so how much more is there to be done in terms of rewriting those narratives? At this point, are you still committed to trying changing those narratives? And, because that's the thing. With the Rockets, he's not going to really be able to do that. He's not going to be in these big moments, we don't think, at least, to where it's a big sixth game, seventh game, and he goes out there and just shuts everybody up. So he doesn't seem that committed to rewriting the narratives around his career, and he seems at peace with it. Would you be, if you were at his age, or would you also kind of be like, "Huh, is what it is, I'm going
to
do what I want"?
Well, to me, the money's important, but also winning is important. And you're not, I mean, he's not too old. If I was in his situation, I would continue trying to win, because in 20 and 30 years, when they look back at championships, because that's really all that's going to be, looked back on, you're not going to be a part of the conversation at all. You won an MVP. Great. Like, maybe he makes it to the Hall of Fame, because the Basketball Hall of Fame is, I mean, it's
pretty
not
easy to get into.
Yeah. It's not anything crazy.
Not that exclusive.
But you're not going to be looked back at as one of the greats at all. I think that would bother me.
Right. Like, that. This is always going to be part of your story. And I would stick it out and try and win. Even if I got a title as, like, he was the second best player behind Embiid on the Sixers. Even if I was the third best player. If I had to Karl Malone Lakers it at the end and it didn't work,
I'm not
for
ashamed
him
to say I would ring chase at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I would continue all the way down to my last year.
All the way. I agree with you. And, I don't have it in me to just be like, you know what? I like the strip clubs. I like Houston. I'm going back.
Maybe getting his jersey retired in the rafters at the strip club in Houston is good enough,
That's right. I forgot about that. All right. From one Sixer, at least still at the moment, Harden, to another, you are Joel Embiid, and your career is widely viewed as an excellent regular season achiever, but oft injured and a playoff underachiever. And you've dealt with a lot of different sidekicks. We talked about not just Harden, but Ben Simmons, Markelle Fultz, the Sixers of Jimmy Butler for a little bit. They've tried a lot of different things around Embiid, and the results have been the same. They lose in the second round every year. Having said all that, this was the first time after this series that I think a lot of the Sixers fans started to wear a little, the Patriots started to wear a little thin with Embiid. But for the most part, you're still very well-liked in Philly. All things considered, are you sticking it out with a team that's done a lot of bad things around you and not been able to really maximize you in a market that you're still pretty well-liked? Or have you had enough? And if you haven't, like, when have you had enough to request that trade? Because people think that might come with Embiid.
Yeah, I think I've had enough. Okay. Like, I think I would be at that point if I was Embiid, because I can always go, like, later on in my career, I can, you know, retire as
Harden
a Sixer.
Rockets it.
Yeah. And people will love you. They'll forget about that. You know, it doesn't matter. Like, you got to worry about yourself in this situation if you want to win. Like, a little selfishness here, because they have not been able to put it together around you. What makes you think they're going to?
Yeah,
you
no.
You got to go find another situation where they may be able to do that for you.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I also think because of that, the only way I'm out is if I am given some guidance as to where I might be traded, because the teams don't owe that to you. They can trade
they
you
don't. That's
wherever
correct.
You get the best deal from. So, like, people throw out the Knicks because they have a ton of draft picks, and maybe there could be, if the Sixers decide to just tear it down and rebuild. Now, the Knicks do have enough in place where if I'm Embiid, I might say, hey, it's a short move. They look to be on the up. That one might make sense. But, you know, conversely, let's look at another trade of a big man recently. I don't blame Utah one second for trading Gobert to Minnesota for what they got. But if you're Rudy Gobert, you're like, well, damn, now I'm on this irrelevant 8 seed. Like, that's what I don't want if I'm Embiid. But the Sixers could trade him wherever they think they can get the best deal from. So I think I would want the caveat of, you better let me know where this thing's going. Otherwise, I'll just stay.
Well, does he have a no-trade clause at all?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know the verbiage of his contract, because I haven't even thought about him getting traded off the Sixers. So I would assume he does, but he may not.
Then he can control it.
I'm not sure. So. All right, you are a player in the playoffs in the NHL or the NBA, and obviously we're down to just 4 teams in each league as we're at the conference final stage. And you've bowed out, and you've had a good season. And there isn't any James Harden drama. It's just, you know, like, let's say you're Jalen Brunson or somebody that, hey, you did everything you could. It just didn't work out. And it's time to decompress. Where are you going on your off-season getaway?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I'm gonna take some time off and go somewhere. It would have to be somewhere with white sand, blue beaches, beautiful women, lots of alcohol, and lots of free time on my hand.
I feel like...
You know?
I hear Cabo a lot.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. Ride around on jet skis, smoke a lot of weed. Like, do whatever you want to do for a couple months. Get fat, whatever.
Get away.
And then come back and get ready and try to go win it
again. I wonder when that switch is flipped. Like, middle of July, early August, when you're like 2.5-3 months away from the season starting.
Probably. Like, you got to kick it up slow and kind of ramp it up to that point. But yeah, probably
so
around
you
there.
Probably get about 2 months here.
Uh-huh. And that, know, I mean, for most people, you don't get 2 months off. Like, so that's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. And lastly, with the Aaron Judge story this week, we didn't dive into it a ton, but there was a camera that caught him staring towards the Yankees dugout in Toronto, and the Blue Jays felt that there were some signs getting relayed to him. And so I ask you, what is your moral line that you draw here on this, where you say actions A, B, and C are acceptable, but X, Y, and Z is cheating?
That's a tough question to throw out there, because I mean, like, what the Astros did was blatant. If he's looking over at the dugout, there's no definitive proof here. So, like, this is kind of a hard question. Give me yours.
Here's where mine is. If he's just looking over at the dugout and it's just people in the dugout that maybe pick some things up and they're trying to relate to him, that's the fair game part of the rules.
Yes.
If there is an orchestrated effort on behalf of the Yankees behind closed doors where there is technology involved, like, and that was the big thing with the Astros, I think that's why Jeff Lunell got, you know, looked at as the poster child of the scandal, because it was something that happened way, like, the trash cans, it is what it is.
Right.
But it's how you're figuring out the signs.
That's
and if
correct.
You're using technology. So that's where I think that's the line for me.
Yeah, and I mean, and other teams were implicated in this. And according to some people, I'm not going to go into details here, it came from the Yankees to the Astros before it happened. So this is a little, you know, suspicious. I don't know if they are doing it. If they're using technology, that's the line.
Yeah.
I think that's the only line that exists.
That's the only line,
everything
yeah.
else you can figure out on the field and use your mind and see, fair game.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I agree. If they're tipping pitches or whatever it might be,
take advantage.
Take advantage of it, part of the game. That is going to wrap things up for our Friday Five and wrap things up for the week. Programming note, I am out Monday through Wednesday next week, so we won't have another show until Thursday, in which case the conference finals will be progressing rather briskly in the NHL and the NBA. So we'll have a couple of shows next week, a short week for me, Thursday and Friday shows, as we're back in 6 days' time with some more First Name Sports. Sports Kings is up on the other side. Thanks to John Bellmer for producing the show, as always. Does a great job. And thanks to our guests for coming on all week as well. My name is Greg Frank, bidding you all a friendly farewell. This has been First Name Sports. Everybody enjoy your weekends. Signing off on the Sports Map Radio Network.